or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, Medical Director for the Atlanta Healing Center. Our team is able to offer a multitude of treatment options, such as quantitative EEG.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another session. We're talking again with Lisa Isom today. As our listeners know, we've been having an ongoing series talking about insurance issues, and I won't say we've covered every issue in the book because obviously we're going to do that again today, but I guess we're getting pretty close maybe for this series that we're doing this particular spring. But anyway, welcome, Lisa.
Well, thank you very much, and as you were saying, you know what we've been trying to do since the beginning of the year is just taking, one coverage at a time, and as we all know, there's so much coverage out there to be had, and understanding, you know, which coverage we have and what we need are some of the questions of how to do those coverages that we do have access to. Within the NSPS program, it sometimes gets confusing. So I appreciate the listeners and some of the questions that we get back and comments that we get, and being able to share that with everyone out there that's listening. It's been working very well, and I think by the sounds of it, answering a lot of people's questions.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it seems to me there's been a pretty good feedback from these shows, and more questions raised as we go along. So I'm encouraged by that, because that was our intent, to let people know about the program and also provide an outlet for them to be able to ask questions and learn more about the issues, not only about our program, but the issues themselves.
Yeah. Well, and you're absolutely correct. I mean, oftentimes, you know, as you well know, I mean, insurance is certainly not, it's one of those necessary evils, you know. Nobody really likes to talk about it, because it's unless you have to use it, you see money going out and you know, and it's a big cost expense for the businesses out there today, and always has been. And you want to make sure, you know, how do I protect myself? And you know, when people start to ask questions, the questions that come out is things that they're really unclear about, because coverages have changed so much over the years, and they continue to do so as our industry changes, as well as, you know, the lawsuits that creep up, everything from employment practices, you know, to where it's, you know, the sexual discrimination, wrongful, terminations and everything. There are new coverages out there to learn about as well. So I know on the last show we were actually speaking about the flood insurance, and you know, there was some things that, you know, we were chatting about then, and naturally with all the rain and storms that's been going on across the country, it causes people to kind of think about the flood insurance again. And one of the things that you and I spoke about on the last radio show, and kind of to start back up there, is the flood insurance is not one that is just necessary for the people that's sitting next to a river, because you have so much of the infrastructure that's not capable of handling a lot of the rainwater now, with the building that's going on, and you know, the concrete cities that we kind of live in now, the infrastructure of the sewer systems and the drainage, et cetera, causes some of the water to flow into basements and lower levels of buildings and, you know, off of gutters, you know, gutters and into window wells that you really never really think about until it occurs. And for a surveyor, I can't tell you how many surveying companies that we will have that, you know, they're in their basement of the building or a lower garden level of a building, and naturally it's more convenient to go in and out, you know, carrying their equipment and so forth, until they have, you know, their battery packs, you know, plugged up and setting in the floor, and they have some rainwater come in and fry everything. Those are those kind of things that pop up, and then they don't realize, you know, unless they have some flood coverage, oftentimes those aren't covered causes of loss.
Yeah, when you mention working on lower levels, throughout my career I've worked in a number of companies, and including my own, but it always seemed that the surveyors were in the lower level of the office complex, or most of us would refer to that to the basement, I guess. But rather than be insulted by that, we surveyors just say we were put there because we're the foundation for everything everybody else does, so therefore we got to be down there supporting them.
That's an excellent point, but you're right. I can't tell you, you know, how many surveying companies that we insure that they are, you know, in the basement area or the lower level, or, you know, one of those bi-level type buildings or something, and it is convenient, you know, going to and from their, you know, the office to the trucks, but at the same time, you know, they do have some of those issues that have creeped up over the years. And just, you know, one of the things with respect to the radio show is giving enough information to the surveyor to where they can then make an informed decision as to how they insure themselves or if they insure themselves. And, you know, naturally from an equipment perspective, you know, you get some water messing around those battery packs. You know, they fried the computer systems in a heartbeat. And we just want to make sure that, you know, if they are there, they're aware that most of the time that is not covered under their policies, and, you know, how do they insure that policy. And what's really, really beneficial from my perspective of hearing some of the feedback that I get from the show is that, you know, it's giving people information that they were not even aware of, to where at least that at that point in time they can come back and ask more questions, or, you know, not feel embarrassed to ask the question. They can, you know, shoot an email to us and ask those questions. So as we were indicating on the last show about the flood insurance, with flood insurance, it's usually a waiting period of, again, 30 days. I just, you know, just recently last week had a phone call from two surveyors that had actually heard the show, and they were basically getting a lot of rainwater. And so, you know, they're calling and saying, you know, I think we may need to put, you know, we're not in a flood zone, we're not in a floodplain, but, you know, we do have this situation or that situation had come up, and in one situation it was right outside of their doorway where the water basically stopped coming up, and it was simply because of the drainage systems had stopped up, and the backup water was coming into or near their offices. So the waiting period on flood insurance is you must put the policy in place for at least 30 days before, or that's a typical waiting period, before the flood occurs. And so if you're not in a flood zone, are in a floodplain, the cost is very inexpensive. So, you know, to where you do have and spur on that coverage, to where you have something, to, you know, should you need the flood insurance to pay for some of your equipment or your personal property for that matter. And that's both in for a home or for a business. So this is one that kind of applies in both places, whether it's the business insurance side of it or the personal side of it. You know, you do typically have a waiting period for it. And, you know, one of the issues that we've had in the past is, you know, the myth that the Federal Emergency Management Disaster Aid will pay for it. That is not the case unless it's declared, you know, a presidential disaster. And so that's, you know, 90% of the flood claims that we see are not from those 100-year floods that you would have the president, you know, indicating that it's a national disaster. So it is one that, you know, if you want to have that protection, it's similar to an earthquake, you're going to have to, you know, cover that insurance under insurance somewhere. So, you know, that was one of the things that I did want to kind of bring back up because most people are not aware of it. And, you know, I know that I've had several calls regarding it since our last show.
Yeah, I know we've got about a minute before the next break, but one of the things that I think you pointed out last time, too, but it's worth reiterating, is that the federal program's the only guaranteed coverage.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it is one of those ones that it is typically a payback. It's a loan. So even if they do cover, you know, up to, you know, if it is a disaster and the president elects it or indicates that it is such, the disaster aid will come to you at the forefront, but it's a waiting period for you to actually get your funds. And even the floods that we've had here in Colorado last year, there are still people that are homeless because they, you know, their disaster funding has not come through for them yet. And when they do that, it's typically $250,000, and it's one of those things that is typically a loan. It's a payback.
Yeah. Well, let's go to our break. We'll come back. Maybe we'll pick up on that a little bit before we go on to the next topic.
Great.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back for our second segment again today with Lisa Isom. We were following up from our last show on the insurance side of things with some talk about or follow-up for some of the flood that we talked about. Maybe, Lisa, it might be worth some clarification. And I know you've talked about this a little bit, but I get it confused in my mind, so I'm assuming other people probably do too. And that is what you were just talking about with disaster funds, versus is the right word, that coverage or funds that you would get from your actual coverage that you would purchase. So, for example, if I understood you correctly, if a federal emergency is a disaster is declared, then people can get help from that, but it doesn't come right away. And then on the other hand, if one has purchased flood insurance in that same event, can they, if I'm understanding this correctly, they can expect some kind of relief more quickly than would happen through the disaster funds? Am I thinking that correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that is really why you do carry the flood insurance. The flood insurance that you would purchase responds to you similar to, like, your homeowners, like if you had a fire. So you're going to get that first drive, if you will, after a disaster or when a claim occurs very quickly. You know, I mean, we're typically talking within 24, 48 hours, whereas, one of the myths, and that this is only during a typical flood zone, if you will, that the federal disaster aid comes after a flood, and most people whether it's a building or whether it's a homeowner's or whether it's even your contents, you know, that's one question that kept coming back to me from our radio show is, well, I don't own my building that my surveying company, resides in, and so I don't really need the flood insurance. Well, you're protecting your contents in that situation, not the building itself because it's owned by someone else. But whether it's home, building, or contents, the myth out there and the belief is that if you have a federal disaster that comes to whether it's an earthquake or a flood, that the Federal Emergency Management Agency will come to your rescue. Well, number one, it has to be declared first by the president. So we may be waiting a while. But then secondly, even if they do, they come in and they start to reimburse you for your losses. So you're going to have to be out the money first. And I don't know about you or a lot of listeners, but oftentimes you don't have a whole lot of money to come up with for, you know, relocation cost, you know, clothes, food, et cetera. And secondly, when they do come to the forefront, it is often in the form of a loan that you then pay back to the federal emergency aid with interest. Okay? So the federal insurance policies that come to the forefront, that's only after the disaster has been paid or claimed. And then whereas a flood insurance policy is totally separate, it's going to respond more quickly, and even if you have it, it will pay up to the point that the federal disaster aids will come in and start to help you to pay back some of that cost that you've been out from the first dollar type of coverage, and you'll have a deductible on it, just like a fire would be.
So with the money that one would get through if a federal disaster was declared, does that come in the form of a loan in every case?
In I would say 99% of the cases, yes.
Okay.
Unless
so
you
it's
have insurance.
Okay. So
yeah,
let's say I'm uninsured and a flood hits and I'm damaged, and it turns out that it is declared a national emergency, then funds are available to me to rebuild or replenish or whatever it is I need to do, but that's not free money. It's a loan. Am I understanding that correctly?
It's more so of a loan that will be paid out over a period of time, and it kind of depends on on it's, you know, it would be similar to like a mortgage that is paid back over the, you know, back to the federal emergency management funds.
So that, okay, I understand that part of it. Now, let's say I am insured,
mm-hmm.
and did I hear you say that even though I may be insured, if a federal emergency is declared, then does that impact what I get from my insurance company because the disaster was declared?
Well, actually, what happens is you basically insure up to 250. Well, it depends on whether it's a business or a home. It's different whether it's commercial or personal. So let's just say for a personal home, when you actually purchase flood insurance, it's purchased, and I believe it's up to $250,000 for a business and up to $500,000 for a personal, that you actually purchase that amount of insurance. If it goes above that, that's when the federal disaster aid kicks in. So your policy kind of has a maximum limit on it.
Right.
And then the umbrella, if you will, kicks in after you reach that limit.
So if I'm replacing whatever it is I have and I reach my $500,000 limit or whatever the limit is, and
right.
then I get money through the disaster relief through the government, then that money's still a loan. It's not.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Well, I just want to make sure that I was clear on that, because I think that would make a lot of difference in people's minds. It certainly clears it up for me, because I've never really given a ton of consideration about that type of thing, because when I built my house, I built it at the highest spot in the area where I live, so that doesn't mean I ain't going to get flooded, obviously, but I really just hadn't thought deeply into the whole federal disaster aid part of it. I hadn't realized that it is a loan process. It's not a process where you're just giving the money.
Yeah, and you never have to repay it. And I think that is one thing that is it's overlooked oftentimes or not understood completely until you have a situation like that. And that's really why a lot of mortgage companies and so forth require, if you're in a flood zone, floodplain, to naturally have flood insurance, because they want to make sure that they're getting their mortgage secured and not waiting on a payback to somebody.
Right. Yeah.
So
your lender wants that to be taken care of, because they're at risk as well.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And before we start on, one of the things that I wanted to, to kind of cover today is umbrella and umbrella excess coverage. But before we do, just to kind of go back a couple of steps, because I know that, a lot of listeners will listen and will probably have the same questions that some others have come back with. But just to kind of revisit a little bit more on professional liability, if I could, we've had some additional questions that came back from the listeners. And one of the things that was brought up is naturally people say, okay, some of the jobs are picking up, and where they may have lowered their limits in the past to help with the economy and their premium charges. Now they're needing to increase their limits when they're picking up some new jobs. And how does that affect their previous limits in the past for their prior acts? One of the things that I would tell you is with a professional liability policy, it is a claims-made policy. So whatever you change, either lowering it or increasing it, it happens from that date forward. So in a situation to where maybe you carried $1 million in professional liability because of a job, then the economy kind of tanked and you had to lower it down to say $300,000, even though you had it at $1 million for 10 years. you had to lower it to 300,000, you then lost that limit of a million, because when you lowered it, it starts from that date forward back to 300,000. And from that, you know, from any acts that you did going forward, okay, then if you increase that limit back up to a million, it's from that date forward. So from June 1st forward, you would have a million on any jobs that you're taking on from that date forward, not in the past.
So okay? Any jobs that I would have had, let's say I had the million, times got tough, so I had to lower it to 300,000, and then times got better again, and I went back to a million. But all the jobs that I did back when I had the million to start with are then under the 300, right?
That is correct.
Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure I understood that.
That is correct, and that is very concerning to a lot of the members right now because, you know, they really didn't understand it when they lowered the limit. Now, when you do an endorsement like that, you can, you know, communicate with the carrier, and they can change the limit from, you know, let's just say 2000 to 2012 at a million, and from 12 to 14, you know, 300,000. There are ways of doing it, but it has to be communicated to that carrier at the time that you're doing it to make sure that coverage is where you needed it to be during the jobs acts at during that time
right.
frame. But yeah, it's basically understanding that, number one. And then going forward, you know, people will call in and want to get a quote, whether it's with us or someone else, and they're concerned about, you know, how can I move from ABC carrier over to, you know, XYZ carrier and not lose.
Before you get into that uh-huh. transfer, I think we're a few seconds away from a break, so let's go ahead and do that, and then you can cover this piece of it when we get back.
Perfect.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back with Lisa Isom again, and we've been discussing insurance coverages, and we talked about flood insurance, and just recently we've been talking more about the professional liability side of things, and retro dates and those types of things, and if we lower coverage, what impact it has on our previous jobs that we may not be aware of. All that's really good information. It's time for our daily question of the day, our weekly question of the day for our sponsor, Parker Davis Quick Stakes, our Quick Stakes contest. The first person to respond with the correct answer gets a gift from our sponsor, and it's Quick Stakes Contest at americaswebradio.com, the quick part being Q-U-I-K. So I guess the question that we want to have today, Lisa, is what is that waiting period again on receiving insurance coverage on flood?
It is a 30-day waiting period as a standard, so that would be the correct answer.
30 days. Okay, that's good. So the first person who comes back with that will be our winner for the day. Before we went to break, you were talking about the liability side and questions that have come from the previous shows and trying to respond to that. And in particular, you talked about you carried coverage up to a certain point, then you had to drop back and in the coverage that you had, and then you pick it up again, but you were explaining how that works back and forth, and that I think you were saying there were certain times you could, I don't know exactly how you were explaining it, but, you know, you said, well, during this time period I wanted this much coverage, and that time period I wanted something else. So maybe you can follow up on that and lead us into these other discussions about it.
Yeah. You know, as I was indicating, at the time in which you're changing your coverage, whether it's for whatever reason, lowering the limit, or to try to save, you know, some money, et cetera, if the communication occurs with your agent and your carrier, there are ways that you can, for lack of better words, tier that limit. So the jobs that you were doing during that period of time that you say you had $1 million of coverage would still be there, and then when from the time that you lowered that limit, then that effective date of that lower limit would go from that point in time forward. And so you can do that. It's making sure that communication has taken place with your agent and as to why you want to make sure that you have that limit put in place. It may be a little bit of extra money, but it's very, very much worth it. You know, if you were doing the job that was requiring you to have $1 million, you want to make sure you have $1 million if a claim pops up 2 years from now. And so, and the same would go going forward. So, you know, the limit of liability is effective that date forward. And so as you raise the limit, you want to make sure that either you go back to the beginning of when you needed that $1 million going forward, or that you understand that any works that you're going to do from that point forward will be at the higher limit.
And that's not necessarily something your agent is going to automatically ask, or perhaps in some cases not even understand.
Well, you know, I would say that is probably the case, is that they don't just like most surveyors don't understand insurance, you know, most agents don't understand surveyors and why you're changing the limits from one point to the other. So I guess over-communicate, like most things, over-communicate why you're doing it and how can you protect your interests. You know, naturally, I would say that I would hope that people would make that aware before you actually make changes to your limits. But by listening to some of the insureds that's been calling in here, that's not often the case. And so I just wanted to make sure that people are aware when you're changing those limits up or down how that coverage would apply should you have a claim that that creeps up in the future.
So I guess in that light, when you're talking about professional coverage, if you're working on a project and the project owner or the person you're working for wants you to or you're required to have liability insurance, just general liability is not really enough, is it?
No, it is not. And general liability, you know, one of the things that the, you know, a couple of the listeners came up, it's very confusing because, you know, oftentimes you think you're carrying business liability and that's going to pick up your professional acts. So, you know, just keep in mind and remember that oftentimes your business liability policy is going to now require that you carry professional or E&O coverage in order to write a business liability policy. There's very few companies out there now that will write a business liability policy without having some limit of professional liability coverage in place. But to remember that your professional liability, oftentimes referred to as E&O, or errors and omissions, that is covering your professional services, your professional acts. Your general liability does not cover professional acts. It's basically non-professional acts that would cover liability that the surveyor could cause to bodily injury or property damage. And so, an example of that is general liability. And unfortunately, you know, this situation happened several years ago in one of the states that, you know, you put out your stakes and maybe it was on a berm or something and a child was jumping the bike, you know, how kids do, and impaled himself onto a stake and cause bodily injury. That's where a general liability is going to come into place. Where if you put that stake incorrectly and you made an error, that is where the professional liability comes into place. So they are two totally different coverages, similar to the difference between an automobile policy and workers' comp.
Are there carriers then that are kind of unique in what they cover? Are there carriers that cover only professional and the others that cover only general?
Most of the time, there are insurance carriers that specialize in land surveying that will write the same types of coverages. The same carrier would write general liability, auto, workers' comp, professional. You know, such as RLI or CNA, some unique carriers such as that. Oftentimes, you'll have a professional liability carrier that does not write any other lines other than the professional liability. So, there are more carriers that write them separately than there are carriers that write them as a combination.
Is there a particular advantage one way or the other, or does it just have to do with the integrity of the company itself?
This is a Lisa Isom opinion. Where I prefer is the carriers that actually understand the profession, and the exposures thereof. So as an RLI, as an example, or a Hanover, as an example, CNA, those are ones that they know all of the exposure for a land surveyor or an architect and an engineer, but primarily land surveyor in our situations. They understand the exposure on all parts. So that is a benefit from my perspective, simply because they understand the profession. But secondly, when it comes down to a claim, if you have a situation to where you're trying to file it more so a professional liability claim under a general liability policy that you think maybe it's going to fit under the products and completed operations, they understand right from the get-go that's really not where it needs to be filed. It needs to be filed under your professional. And so at the end of the day, it helps your claims along, just the knowledge, whether the knowledge is with your agent or the carrier or both. Understanding that profession and what you do and how you do your works is huge, really. It's really a huge situation. So those are the the things that we chatted about and have come up since our last show that I wanted to reiterate. But, you know, going in and moving on to some of the other coverages that we've chatted about, what I've tried to do is break down insurance coverage by coverage by coverage. So we've talked about general liability. We've spoken about the surveying equipment and the automobile coverage, as well as the professional liability. Now we kind of move forward. Those policies that we've talked about in the past are more of the basic policies that any land surveyor in business will need. You know, you got your general liability, your auto liability, your professional liability, workers' compensation, and then you basically move on to umbrella. And from a business perspective, an umbrella is just that. It is supposed to be setting over and protecting underneath all of those policies that exist from a liability perspective. And you know, the short version of an umbrella, it provides higher limits of your underlying coverage, which that underlying coverage, again, is typically general liability, auto liability, and employer's liability, which employer's liability is part of your workers' compensation. And what it does is provides you an extra layer of liability and is typically required by contracts. They are now requiring typically $1 million, sometimes $3 and $5 million umbrellas. And naturally, as everything else in life goes up, so does the exposure for your liability. You know, now I will have to say that an umbrella is one of those coverages that are oftentimes overlooked, may not even be offered to a surveyor unless you're required by contract by your agent, but is oftentimes overlooked, but it provides the most cost-effective coverage on liability out there. And what I mean by that is where your, you know, as an example, your general liability may cost you $1,000 to provide you $1 million, $2 million in liability. Your auto insurance, everyone knows how auto insurance coverage is pretty expensive oftentimes. And, you know, as an example with an umbrella, you're probably looking at $1 million.
I hate to break in, Lisa, but we need to go to our last break.
Okay, great.
So let's do that, and we'll come back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everybody, to our last segment today with Lisa Isom, speaking insurance for specifically for professional surveyors and surveyors' employees as well. And Lisa's going to talk about that a little bit before we get off the show. But you were talking about the business umbrella side of things and general liability, automobile, and then the Part B of workers' comp.
Yeah. You know, and you know, as I was explaining when we went to the break, you know, an umbrella, whether it's for your business or your personal, I highly suggest anyone get a quote for umbrellas. Even if you don't take it, just to take a look at the cost difference. Oftentimes with an umbrella, you can extend your personal liability or your coverage for $1 million. You're probably looking at maybe $350 per year to extend to have the availability of an extra $1 million should you need it. And in today's world, you know, that is one that it's whether or not you're driving a vehicle, we all know from a general liability perspective, not to say that a surveyor can't have a general liability claim. They do, but they are very few and far between in my 20-plus years of experience. But where you're going to have a claim is in the vehicle. And if you're driving a vehicle out there, we will typically recommend, you know, naturally $500,000 at the minimum, but we typically will write $1 million of coverage on any vehicle that you're going to be driving a crew around. And if that vehicle that you own have an accident, that you can go through $1 million in a heartbeat. You know, any attorneys can, you know, if anyone's injured and God forbid anyone's, you know, killed or paralyzed, you're above $1 million in a heartbeat. And then it's coming back to your personal, your business assets, or if you're a sole proprietor, even back to your personal assets. So the $1 million limit for an automobile policy is huge from a surveyor's perspective. So even if you carry and you elect to carry an umbrella for your business, you don't necessarily have to show all your clients that. I mean, you don't advertise that you have a life insurance policy out there, okay? So you don't have to show an umbrella policy either. So make sure that your agent understands, unless you tell them, you don't have to advertise you have $1 million or more in an umbrella limit, but you have that for a safe keep should you need it. You know, that would be one thing. And I would tell you the same thing for your personal. So one thing that I would tell you, most umbrella policies do not set above professional liability. You can get them, but they're few and far between. But most umbrella policies set above the normal general liability, auto liability, and your workers' compensation. And it does protect the business, and it does set typically as first dollar defense on any suit that the underlying does not cover. It would set down, and then the retained limit comes into place, which the retained limit is similar to a deductible.
Is this the kind of coverage that would, you mentioned early on something about unlawful dismissals and that kind of thing. And then you also mentioned the fact that we're in a litigious society, which we are. So I guess in times past, people perhaps didn't think about that type of issue in terms of, you know, we're all, particularly if you live in a right-to-work state and that kind of thing.
Right.
But I guess those issues can come into play as well. And is that part of this umbrella thing?
No, it is not. The employment practices liability, directors and officers liability, professional liability are all separate policies. And that is huge when you think you're covered when in fact you're not, unless you have a separate policy for that. And those are items that we will cover later on in our segment. But this would be for like bodily injury, property damage, bodily injury from a liability perspective on those underlying policies. So normally the professional E&O, D&O is not part of an umbrella as a business umbrella is concerned. Now, where you go into a personal umbrella, okay, so it's covering you personally, oftentimes you will have, it will extend above your home. It will extend above your home liability. It will also extend above your personal auto liability. And, this is one that we will, I'll briefly speak on it today, but we can pick up on at the next show. But under a personal liability policy, there are umbrella policies, and one of the carriers that we represent within NSPS's program, it will actually extend above uninsured or underinsured liability, not just auto, but any uninsured, underinsured liability as a whole. And that is huge. So in today's society, an example would be as, you have a personal umbrella that is, say, $5 million, and everybody goes, well, I don't have, assets that is $5 million, or I don't have, I can't ever see where I would need $5 million. Well, if you have a youthful driver, or not even a youthful driver, an automobile accident, and you hit, a car with four or five people in it, and there's three quadriplegics from an auto accident, there in which your $5 million is exhausted for lifetime care in a heartbeat. Or, God forbid, you're hit by a teenager that carries $300,000 just to get, keep down their premiums because you got maybe a 16-year-old driving. They hit you. They don't have a personal umbrella. So basically, at the end of the day, they hit you and, paralyze you or cause bodily injury, severely that you're going to have to be cared for the rest of your life.
So $300,000
is gone.
I was just going to say, going back to that thought, you're talking about if somebody injures you injures you personally. So would that same kind of scenario be covered under the umbrella business if one of your employees was injured on the job and that person who was at fault didn't have enough to cover it?
Yes, it would.
But that would be under the business side. That wouldn't be under the personal side.
That's correct. It would be under the business side.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. And, just to kind of go through, and I'm going to, I know that we're getting close to our end, but just to give some people some food for thought, and we'll pick up on this next time. But, from a personal perspective, one of the verdicts that we have with one of the carriers that we were just speaking about with respect to the personal liability side of it, in the state of Virginia, a neighborhood child was playing in the backyard and broke his neck on a swing set. It was $1.5 million in the verdict for that homeowner. Okay? Let's see. A child, or not a teenager, was actually posted some information on the internet through social media that was not appropriate. Came back, and the verdict in Michigan was $11.3 million that the parents was responsible for. A verdict in California, a child of, you know, the homeowner caused an automobile accident. Two children was left, one death. A mother, the husband was killed, and a $49 million verdict was handed down. A boating accident in Oklahoma, and the boating accident, a person hit another boater, and the verdict was handed down of $31 million. As you can obviously tell, there are, you know, the verdicts out there are unreal in today's society. And you know what you don't, you know what you want to do, and it's very inexpensive from an umbrella perspective, is to protect those lifetime hardworking accomplishments that you've done. And with an umbrella and the personal assets, I mean, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is they can attach your real estate. They can attach any type of cars or boats, etc., any personal possessions. And then they can even go as far as any type of retirement account. They can attach that from a verdict that is handed down from a personal liability perspective.
Well, I know we're gonna talk about it in our next show, and as we continue on the personal lines thing, but maybe teaser is probably not the right word here, but in leading up to that, that's one of the things our program at NSPS was designed to do, was to provide availability to these types of coverages, not only for our members, but for people who work for them as well.
Absolutely.
We'll get into those, of course, next time. But just the things you mentioned, people might think, well, you know, that big deal, but that could happen to anybody, and having the availability to get coverage through our program for your employees, I think, is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it is. It is, you know, to be able to have that access just because, you know, you belong. So it's huge, and I'm here, and, you know, I believe we're getting down to the end here. But
yeah, we've got about a minute probably.
Okay, if anyone has any questions, again, thank you and to you and to the listeners for allowing us to talk, and hopefully we provide some information that is beneficial to everyone. But if anyone has any questions or would like for me to bring it up in the future, please feel free to give me a call at 888-454-9562, or you can certainly reach me.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.